What's up, peeps? Before you get into the episode, just a quick message. Did you know that Rebranded Safety is brought to you by RiskFluent? Rebranded Safety is essentially our campaign to achieve our purpose, which is to make the working world better by rebranding safety one interaction at a time. We value a people-centered approach that delivers positive impact on the risk. We deliver three types of services: technical, transformational, and fire. It's the last two I want to talk to you about. If you value what we value and you want some support driving a culture change or decluttering your safety systems, or you want to improve human performance, then it's our transformational support that can help you. Or maybe you want a highly experienced registered fire risk assessor to carry out an assessment on your building, design an emergency plan, or review the fire safety design for your new building, then it's our fire support service that can help you. But before you get in touch with us, it's important that you want to have impact on the actual risk and you value a people-centered approach. If you don't, that's fine. You'll find someone that can help you. But if you do value those, then get in touch with us at riskfluentltd.com or email me, james@riskfluentltd.com. But for now, I'll let you get into the episode.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Back to our normally scheduled content today. We're having a great conversation with a great young lady. Let's jump into the intro and tell you some more about it.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety, crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by RiskFluent.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is doing exactly what it says on the tin. We're here to change the perception of health and safety. We do that right here on YouTube and the podcast as well. So if you're new here, hit that subscribe button and the bell and the like and all those magical algorithm thingamajigs. So back to our normally scheduled content today. Today we're talking to a, I'd like to say, friend of mine. As most people are that come on here, I just kind of befriend them whether they like it or not, but also a member of Project Miletium. Don't worry, this is not an episode just selling Project Miletium. This is a conversation, an emergent conversation between me and Elisa, where we just talk about her career, really, and talk about her experiences of working in safety around the world, and also just doing the do, and learning and picking a career and deciding whether she wants to stay in safety, which I think is a thing that a lot of us have gone through. I've definitely gone through that. I thought, do I really want to do this for the rest of my life? Obviously I do, because my entire life is this. But I had a great conversation with Elisa, and I hope you enjoy it as well. It's just a chit-chat. But before we get into that, just a quick shout out from our sponsor of Rebranding Safety Podcast and YouTube channel, Paradigm Human Performance, and more specifically, the HSE subscription service. Perfect solution for those small, medium-sized enterprises that are juggling all the balls and spinning all the plates, and sometimes safety can fall by the wayside. But ultimately, compliance is something we need to do. So if you're keen to nail down your industry and regulatory compliance needs, then this is the solution for you. But this is not just your everyday off-the-shelf compliance product. This is a compliance service, a subscription service designed by human and organizational performance experts. This is all about getting worker safety and the DNA of your organization. So if you're sold already and you need this and you're thinking, yes, this is right for me, you can contact Paradigm Human Performance with an email address and phone number in the description below. But if you're still not sure, you can go to their website and check out the Learning Organization webinar. Run every Thursday at 2 p.m. where one of the Paradigm team or Teresa herself will have a conversation with the community, with operational professionals, with HOP professionals, safety professionals, and just have this amazing conversation full of so much information and content for you to take away. And the best of it is, once you've signed up, you can get access to all of the backlog, all of the old webinars as well. Okay, without further ado, let's get into my great conversation with the amazing Elisa Lynch. Now, normally I'd get away with press and record because it just recorded. But now it says this thing. Did you hear that where it says?
I heard it because it gave me the option to leave the meeting.
Yeah, it never did that before. So if I got someone who was a little bit nervous, like I could tell you're a little bit nervous. I would just press record and then talk to you for a little bit and then go, well, we've already been recording for 10 minutes. And then
I've heard you do that a few times. I'm like, you asshole. I fucking, that's.
Yeah.
But, why?
Zoom have screwed that for me, so I can't do that.
The worst thing is, I don't know what the worst thing is. It's just kind of like, oh yeah, I swear a lot. But when I get nervous, it's like, I swear a lot. And it's like,
You've listened to my podcast, right? I swear a lot.
Yeah, but anyway, look, fuck it, go on.
To be fair, not as much as you.
No, not as much as me. Like, and then I exploded into swear words.
At least you've got like, very...
I can't not swear. I was like, fucking bleh. And you laugh. So.
You've got a very low opinion of yourself, haven't you?
I don't. I'm class. Genuinely, fairly okay self-confidence-wise. Fairly. Except when it comes to things like this. And I'm like, oh, imposter syndrome. Like, definitely imposter syndrome, which I think a lot of people have. Most people have. And if you want to bring it back to safety, that's a fucking hard thing to have, walking out onto a shop floor, construction site, and then that when it's just like, I don't know what I'm talking about. They all know I don't know what I'm talking about. How's your procedure? Yeah, great.
How's your procedure? Yeah, good. Nice. Yeah, I'll see you later.
Well, on the flip side, it does happen though. Do you ever find where like you walk on like to a site or whatever and people really assume that you know what you're talking about?
That's worse, as far as I'm
concerned. It's worse, but shit just starts to literally happen around you. You're just walking along and stuff just starts to get
like,
cleaned up.
Like Jesus parting the waters.
Parting, yeah, exactly. It's good crack though, but you're like, yeah, that.
Like you just wave your hand and all of a sudden everyone's wearing hard hats. Like it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Like magic.
Yeah. Well, it was one day I was walking past a fella and he started talking about this mag drill, right? And he was like, no, I know this is meant to be this way and that's meant to be that way. And I was like, what the fuck is a mag drill? I had to go back to the office and Google it. And the breeze what he was talking about.
Why didn't you say, what's a mandrake in that moment or whatever? I said mandrake. That's something out of Harry Potter. I have no idea what you just said. What did you say? What tool?
A mag drill. It's like
a mag drill. I didn't hear
mag
that.
Drill.
Right, hang on a minute. Let me turn my headphones up.
Is it your headphones or is it that I'm speaking too fast?
No. I'm hard of hearing. So it's probably me and the headphones. Hang on a second. There we go. Turn them up a bit. Carry on. So why didn't you just say to him, I don't know what a mag drill is, a mag drill.
I would now. I actually would now. Would even go back like a year ago, there's no way I would have. There's no way I would have said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I just wouldn't have fucking done it because, you know, you have to be the person who knows or at least seems to know or they assume you know. So you're like, yeah, I'll keep going with the idea that I do know. We'll all have that idea, which is great. But I would now. I've definitely, in the last year, like as obviously shit as COVID has been, like how deadly has it been for like learning and webinars and all this kind of stuff? So now it's a very different story. I can hear my chair squeaking and it's annoying me.
It's life. Chairs squeak in real life.
Fucking cut that out. Don't want them thinking. What are you very chair? About chair.
I'm gonna leave it in. I'm gonna leave this in. Us talking about don't leaving leave- it in or not.
Fucking prick.
I'm gonna leave that in as well.
Oh my God, stop. Stop it. Look, it's fine. I'm never going to listen to it anyway. So it'll be grand. Put whatever you want in it. I don't care.
The more podcasts you go on, the more you'll get used to listening to your own voice. And then you'll come back to listen to this and you'll be like, oh, this is actually pretty good.
I did really well. Fair play to me.
Yeah. James is a shit host, but I was really good. do you think that shift from... like you kind of being seen as the expert to a lot of people call it facilitators, don't they? But like that shift helped you in that reduction of imposter syndrome on site. Like was it you first? Like, did you have to stop seeing yourself as the expert first or did they have to stop seeing you as the expert first? Does that make sense?
It does. I would say they did because I never saw myself as the expert anyway.
Okay.
And I remember even when I started out, like I remember my first day walking onto a formwork deck, like a 17th story in the middle of Sydney. And everybody knew it had gone around the site like wildfire that like, oh, there's you know, a fucking 25-year-old woman on the site as a safety advisor and she's no experience. Like everybody knew anyway. So there was no point in trying to pretend you're an expert. Because you just literally fall flat on your face. But then I suppose, yeah, after a couple of years, when people don't know where you've come from or what your experience has been, then that's when they start, you walk onto a job and they're like, oh, here comes safety. You must know XYZ. So, yeah. Actually, I've just remembered, I think it was like the first week I was on site and like that, we were up, like I was building a high rise in Sydney and I was literally being taught how to walk on steel. And especially how to look for the steel that isn't already tied, because you know it rolls and you're kind of like a little Bambi walking around the place. And the safety advisor with me, who was taking me on a tour around site, like hit the deck. He just face planked. Like, oh fuck, it was so, John, you literally like just hold your breath. And he just got straight back up and he went, "Way!" And just carried on. And all the carpenters just kind of went, "All right," and said nothing. I was like, amazing.
What, amazing. He just tripped over? Or
he literally tripped over and fully face planted on the deck. And but jumped straight back up, kind of laughed it off himself. And because he laughed it off himself, there was no more joke to make. And he just carried on. It was brilliant.
I kind of love that story.
Yeah, it was really good.
Did you not say anything because you were struggling not to laugh? Are you one of those people that really
I was struggle? Fucking stunned. I was just stunned that it even happened. I wasn't even not laughing. I was stunned and immediately then going, oh my God, like, cause we were probably about 10 meters away from the lift core to get back down to like concrete slab levels. And I was just like, oh fuck, how am I going to get back there without falling? And they can see, you like literally with your arms out, waddling along, trying to not.
So I've got visions of you just walking on like steel RSJ kind of things with.
No, they're not RSJ. It's like reinforced steel. Like, do you know the steel, the little narrow steel bars that go through concrete?
Yeah, vaguely. Oh, you mean like the rod things?
Yeah.
The like. Yeah. So you have see like in mesh. Films.
Well, yeah.
That you know they throw at people and kill zombies with and stuff.
Yeah, those ones. No.
they've got like a rib going around them, like a spiral on the outside. Then
yes, exactly those. So you've like layers and layers and layers of those, and they're all just tied together with tie wire. But if you're walking along and there's one that hasn't been tied off properly, it will roll, and you'll fucking slip. So and like when they put those down, and then there's like a layer of mesh that goes over it, and you have to walk across it kind of like diagonally so that you can.
I'm with you.
Balance. After like a week or two, you're grand. And then you get a bit cocky and then you have a bit of a wobble and you're like, well, maybe not. But it's, yeah.
So
now talking about this makes me miss high rise construction. I'm like, oh, take me back.
Yeah, we're going to say that sounds cool AF. Like, what was it kind of like that sounds like a massive, was that your first safety job?
Yes. Like I was way in over my head. Like I was in over my head in one sense that like, okay, I'm so like, cause I had started, like I was over in Sydney. I had been there probably about five years at the time, maybe. And I had been working in traffic control in like civil infrastructure. So they were putting like underground cables, trenching along roadways and all that stuff, which we called construction because we wore steel toe cap boots. Yeah, I work in construction. There's diggers and I'm wearing boots. And, you know, we didn't differentiate between civil works and it was all the construction industry.
Yeah.
Until you get to actual construction. They're like, you don't know construction. And you're like, well, of course I do. And then you look up and you're like, holy shit, there's 17 stories of concrete. Yeah. What I'm cool, like. And, but it was amazing. And like, I had done this, the qualifications in Australia, like Australia, obviously, you know, they're, all the lads are over there doing all their safety science stuff, which is great. And they're the leaders and all the rest. But I will say the like barriers to entry are pretty low for qualification wise getting in there. Okay. Like a diploma over there was a 5-day. You could either do it over 5 days face to face or else an online course. Which, to be honest, you could have literally written the word diploma on the back of on a cornflakes box and been like, here's my qualification. Like, it cost, I think, on sale. These things were always on sale. There was loads of learning providers and they were always on sale. $300, do your diploma, get your safety job.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And like, and next thing, oh, you're qualified. And you're like, am I though? Doesn't feel like it. And you, because it's pretty poor. And so then you go on site and you learn whatever company's safety management system is already in place. That's what you're learning. That's what you're using anyway. And you're kind of, at the time, I just kind of thought, well, yeah, they've got it. Like, if this is a really big company, safety management system is in place, I'll just follow that and I'll be all good. Which in theory, yeah.
In theory, yeah. We've all been there. So were you in Australia and then started a career in safety, or did you start a career in safety and then choose to go to Australia?
No, I started it over there. So I went to Australia in 2008. I wasn't long out. I was 20 when I went over. Like, I went for a year, not a career kind of a thing.
Okay.
Went backpacking, got to Sydney. It was amazing. There were so many pubs. It was like, this is unreal. And it was just basically like loads of Irish people on the piss. And I did what nearly everybody else did, got a job in traffic control and drank all my money. That was it. I lived there for 9 years. I was on Bondi Beach, I think, about 5 times. But I just didn't go there.
Did you find I went to Sydney on my honeymoon. Did you find the pace of Sydney just really slow? Like, maybe if you're, well, maybe it's different, but like, you know, like if you go to London. And it's,
yeah, so I hadn't, I like, I think I had been to London for like a weekend before, but so I went from like relatively rural Ireland to Sydney, which was like mind-blowing metropolis. Like, at the time, the highest building in Ireland was actually 17 stories. It's in Cork City. So I was like, look, skyscrapers.
See, I've been in London like loads. Then we went to Sydney and I was just like, Jesus, this is a sleepy city. Like, everyone's just like, do, 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 do. We went to like, what's the main train station in Sydney called? I can't remember.
Town Hall, which is central or whatever.
Like the St. Pancras of Sydney, basically. And we went there at like rush hour and there was like just everyone just like chilling, just walking around. And I'm like, if we were in London right now, you wouldn't be able to move an inch without being run over.
Yeah. Well, no, for me, it felt busy.
Yeah.
But Ireland. So definitely, it still felt like a lot. But it was, it was unreal. It was really cool. But to start, I started safety over there. And actually, a lot of Irish women who go over there backpacking go do traffic control. And then actually, I remember I was talking to somebody here about it, going, it's kind of the natural move. You go from traffic control, you move up the line, you become a team leader and then a traffic control manager and then a traffic designer. And then it was just a lateral move over to safety. Whereas here, they don't see that as a normal move, but over there, it's very common. Because you would literally do anything to get out of traffic control, because managing backpackers like me, it's really difficult. So there was a lot of people who had done that. And there was a friend of mine at the time who had already done her online course. And so next thing you're got your new shiny high vis on and you're up on the farm up deck doing safety. It was bizarre. It's like definitely bizarre, but yeah, a fantastic experience. So was
it quite, I'd imagine it quite bloody daunting, like being a 25-year-old Irish female in construction in Australia. Like, that must have been like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it was. But like, I mean, I suppose you can definitely, like, first thing is you can really play up the Irish thing because everyone thinks you're great crack. So you can just kind of chat away to people. You just kind of blow into a room. You're like, well, let's have an induction. Sure, why the fuck not? Like, and you just on a show every morning of like, this is going to be the best fucking induction of your life.
And everyone's just sitting there being like, I bloody love the Irish, mate.
They do. Like, They do. And next thing, like before you know it, you're walking on sidewalks and you've subbies over like, well, how's things? You're like, hey, and you're having the banter. Everyone's like, why are you so friendly with them? And you're like, sure, why not?
Yeah.
And that's how you, and then that's how you learn about all the different trades and all the rest, because you're going around having the crack with them and seeing what they're up to. And or and another one, I'm like, here, can you show me, can you tell me how you do that so I can use it against you later? Tell me how you do that so I can use it against you later. And they would, like,
I think that's a massive part of it. I think that's a huge part of it. Like, that's pretty much exactly what I did. I started in manufacturing, and it was just like, it was such a typical lads environment. Like, it was all just like, just blokes lifting, chucking bubble wrap off a machine and pushing big buttons and pulling levers. And they would, I mean, don't get me right, I'm wrong, I'm not proud of what that factory was like. Like, it was like one woman walked through and everyone just freaked out. Like, they've never seen a woman in their entire life. It wasn't good.
Yeah.
But that kind of like, that kind of like just, yeah, like you say, just having a laugh with them and coming across like a, maybe like a normal human being and not a safety professional. It's like a massive part of it. For me, it was anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I was lucky as well with there was two kind of senior safety officers that were training me in. And they had both come from the tools and they were both in their 50s, maybe. Two lads, and they were great crack. And like they like they used to always, whenever like our manager would come down, then they'd be like, oh, here comes Mr. DuPont. And like it took me, I had a fucking clue even who DuPont were. I was like, what does that mean? But it like so they had a great way with the lads. I suppose I learned that from them from the outset. But you'd still have days where you're walking around like an absolute dickhead of, oh, the method statement doesn't say this. And it's like, yeah, like when yeah. I think back at it, it's mortifying, absolutely mortifying to think.
But so being learning to do safety, like you said, that they're like the leaders in this new view of safety. Being learning safety in Australia, you must have just been right into that new view stuff, surely. Australia are just amazing at all of this stuff.
You would think that, but no, there's not that much fucking new view happening. Now, I've been gone from Australia since late 2017, so I can only speak, and I'm kind of conscious of who's listening to this now, but I'm like, this is my experience of it.
Yeah.
I remember, yeah, that first company I was with, and they were a big, like, ASX listed company. They weren't big, and they had brought in this guy called Rob Sams is his name, and he actually, this fella now has done work with Rob Long, all that gang. And they came to me one day like, oh, we're putting all the safety advisors on this, it's going to be like one full day a week for 6 weeks with this guy Rob Sams. And I was like, really? Like, fucking brilliant. Like, I was so excited, delighted. But I was like, do you understand what these guys do? Like, these are, we're going to be talking about like semiotics and all this kind of stuff, and which was new to me as well. But what I really struggled with is I had been reading up of Rob Long stuff from the very start. Like, I had gone into this website looking for fucking safety slogans or something and got like drawn in to all their kind of anti-safety stuff. So I was reading all of that while being trained up in how to be a safety officer. So there was, yeah, that, I don't know if it made it better or worse for me, but I definitely struggled with it because I'd be going out on site, like driving for compliance, but knowing that wasn't really the right way to be doing things. And you just felt like a dickhead doing it. But next thing, your manager is with you doing a site walk and there's somebody over there doing something wrong. And you just kind of freeze. And the manager looks like, what are you going to do about that? Oh, Christ. So you have to walk over and kind of like, why are you doing that? All right, yeah, come down for reinduction in the morning. Right, okay, cheers, bye. But like brutal stuff.
But lame, shame, retrain.
Yeah, it was very much so lame, shame, retrain. And then at the same time, hey, we're going to send you through this training with this guy who actually, it was amazing. Like, he came in, they had just released this new safety campaign. It was, all the posters were everywhere. And there was one poster about wearing safety glasses. And it was something like, oh, you want to lose an eye, or, you know, one of these.
You only got one pair, like that.
Yes,
kind of.
Oh, yeah.
You can't change this pair of eyes. Yeah, like these are not like shoes. I've seen them all. Like, they're terrible.
They're so bad. But he was talking about like the power of language and semiotic and all this stuff. And he was like, and like our manager was in on the course as well. And your man just started not tearing things apart, but he's just gently questioning, like, so like, what does this message actually send? Like, if I came in here and I saw this and I kind of thought, do they actually think that I don't give a shit about my own eyes? Like, is that not weird to you? That's not what we meant. It's like, kind of is though. Like, that's really
like how it's patronizing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, it's shocking bad. Like, it's really, it's not great. But we did the full course, and I remember on like the third or fourth day getting into an argument with this other safety advisor on the team about like, why do people work the way they work? I will never forget it. And she was like, well, they do it that way because that's what's written in the method statement. And I was like, what fucking planet are you on? I was like, nobody reads those. And like this now, I was only like 3 months into the job. And kind of, you know, when you're like 4 or 5 hours into the day, you get a bit comfortable, you forget who's in the room. And I'm like, nobody fucking reads those. Yes, they do. That's why they're working in that particular way. I was like, no. I was like, the method statement is written that way because that's mostly kind of what they do. It was a good guess by whoever wrote it in the office, but like, you know, and it just went to Jesus, we nearly had war inside there about these method statements. And the course finished anyway, and never heard anymore. These guys never came back to consult after that. I just went down the blame train, whatever it is. So
blame shame retrain. So did you shame. Did so When you were over, how long were you in Australia for?
9 years.
9 years. And did you work for a company that was going on that New View route or not?
No. So
No, never.
So
you were kind of just fighting that battle yourself, really?
I wouldn't even say I was fighting the battle myself. Like, I wasn't in any way trying to change things because I honestly didn't think it was possible. Like, yeah. There was so much rules, policies, procedures, documentation, stats, all, you know, all that stuff. And so there was no point in trying to change any of it. You just kind of deal with your own sight and your own people around you, and that's all really you can do. I remember I had gone to, it's a couple of years after, I had taken a job as a safety manager, right? Like, second job. So first job, safety junior. First job
was
disruption.
Was it called safety junior?
No, it was...
Oh, right.
No, it was a HSE coordinator. And I think like HSE coordinator, HSE officer, whatever. But, so I was a HSE coordinator, then a HSE officer. And then my next job was with a new company as their safety manager.
Right.
Out of my depth completely, like, shouldn't have even, but I was like, I had this thing over there, like, I'll always say yes and I'll figure it out after.
Yeah.
Which stood to me, like, I mean, one of the biggest traffic control jobs I had was, there was this civil works company, and they're like, hey, we want to create our own traffic management division, can you help us? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. And so I did. And like, literally replaced this whole subcontracted company with like 60 Irish backpackers doing traffic control. It was great crack. but yeah, I can do that. So I am. I've gone off my train of thought now. Where was I going with that?
You were talking about being a safety manager in your.
Oh yeah, being a safety manager. So, and this thing came up. I don't know. It was in an email, but I got this thing of Art of Work workshop. And I was like, what is this? And it was expensive. And it was a 2-day thing, but you could go for 1 day and pay half. So I was like, I'll see if I can get approval to go for the 1 day. So to be fair, the company I was with, like, yeah, no bother, off you go, we'll pay for that. And I went, and it was actually like the workshop was run by Daniel Humberdahl and Kelvin Ginn.
Nice.
And again, if I could go back now, I would know. But I was just in this room going, oh, who are these people? What are they on about? Like, this is all a bit far-fetched. These guys are fucking dreaming. Like,
yeah.
I was just like, this is never going to happen. This is never going to take hold. You know, I just really didn't see how it could be done. And even there was, because Lang O'Rourke were doing it at the time, and they had a guy from Lang O'Rourke in the room. Unfortunately, it wasn't John Green, but they had
you
a guy.
You wouldn't have known even if it was.
I wouldn't have even fucking known he was. So yeah, that's true. It wouldn't have mattered. But yeah, and he was like, "Yeah, we've done this and we've done that," and but I just didn't. I don't know. It obviously planted a seed that a couple of years later I was like, "Oh, now I get it," kind of a bit. But at the time. It didn't, it just went completely over my head. And I kind of walked out of there going, well, that was an expensive one day. I don't know how I'm going to go back and explain what I got out of it. So
that was like day dot. That was patient zero, really, maybe.
But
you were already kind of maybe on that wavelength anyway.
I think I was, which is actually why I think I struggled with the job from the outset. Yeah. Like I did, I was like, why am I doing this? Like it's, other than, I mean, Jesus Christ, the money is great in Australia. Like it's really good. If there's one thing I miss, it's the sun and the money. But, because even when I tried before leaving Australia, I quit safety completely, went off, did a barista course, and then applied for a couple of jobs, waitressing and things like that, because I was like, I cannot stay doing this absolute shit with LTIs and MTIs and fucking arguing with doctors over certificates. And like, because even over there, I haven't actually experienced that here, but over there, like, it's intense when you're working for a tier one or subcontracted into a tier one company in construction, the levels that they will go to avoid an LTI is shocking. Like, it's, I am not proud of some of the things I have done to get the desired result from a doctor's appointment. Put you that way.
Are you willing to elaborate or not? You can say no.
No, like, I could elaborate. Like, I mean, you would literally be going into the doctor's office with guys, like, you know, so. Which that would not happen here. It just wouldn't happen here. They'd be like, fuck off. Like, I have my privacy. But yeah, so you'd be going in, sitting in the doctor's office, depending on what the injury is. So if it's like a lot of the kind of smaller injuries, you'd be like, all right, take him up to the medical center, get it sorted. So you're like, right, okay. So up you go, and you literally go in and you sit with them. And unless the really kind of clued in guys, the unionized guys, be like, you can wait outside. And you're like, right, no bother. But then you'd like, your phone would be absolutely hopping. Your site manager, your own manager, regional manager. What's happening? What's the update? What's happening? What's the update? Like, it's intense. And then you then shift that onto, and especially if he's like a guy belonging to a subcontractor, you were then, it's literally harassment. Like, I remember there's this one guy, and I was calling and calling and calling, and I was like, what's the story with your fella? Like, did you get the certificate? Did you get the certificate? And because over there, it's like, it's a certificate of capacity, which is actually fucking hilarious now when I think of the word capacity. That we're learning about it. It's like, has he capacity or no capacity? And you just go, no capacity, and all hell breaks loose. Because all of a sudden now, it's a much bigger deal. It's an LTI. But like, ringing this guy, being like, what's the update? And he was like, Elisa, I am driving home, like, it's Friday evening at 7 o'clock, and I'm driving up the coast to my family. Leave me the fuck alone. Yeah. And I was like, I can't. I need to know. I need you to tell me. I need you to email me a copy of the certificate, because until I see it, until they see it, this will not stop.
Wow.
Like, it's very intense.
Where did that pressure come from? Where's that pressure come from? Is that like their bonuses tied into that, or?
Yeah, I believe in a lot of companies, it's bonuses. A lot of them are just, there's bonuses, and it's just the stats are pulled up in every monthly meeting. You're like, we actually had, like, in some companies they're called like traffic light meetings.
Yeah.
It's actually called the traffic light meeting. And you know, yeah, it was just, it was bizarre. It was really bizarre. And it actually became easier when I no longer worked directly for one of those companies, when I was a subcontractor. When I worked for a subcontractor, you could literally move the guy off site because they'd be like, oh, is he on light duties? And you go, yeah, he's on light duties there. He's just somewhere else. And they don't care. They just want the answer that they want.
Just the number or the lack just of numbers.
Yeah, just the no numbers.
Mm.
So, right. But I remember actually one time there was this crowd, and they, so this subcontractor, and he had done nearly a really good job of editing the certificate of capacity that the doctor had given. He had photoshopped it, like, and I remember I was scrolling down, and I just, some thing in the font caught my eye, and I just zoomed in. I was like, fuck, he's after editing this. And I was literally like, do I pretend I haven't seen it?
Because so he'd edited it to what, to say that he did have capacity.
That this guy had capacity. Yes, he was on light duties. He was just on another site. And yeah, and I remember scrolling past going, what do I do? Like, do I just accept the certificate and pretend that I didn't know it was edited? Do I flag it and then go back to him and be like, you've done this. I know you've done this. You need to go, like, at that point, there was no going back to the doctor. There was no getting a new certificate. He's obviously gotten the certificate he's gotten. Yeah. Although we have at times been sent back to a doctor, like, change it. We can do light duties. We can do this. We can do that. Convincing a doctor to change it. But yeah. And so I called him up and I was like, oh, are you around? And he said, yeah. And I said, all right, come meet me. We'll have a chat. And I said to him, I was like, whoever in your office did that did nearly a good enough job. But I was like, I know what you've done. And he was like, what do you want to do? And at this point, it was only me and him that knew.
So who had edited it?
Hmm?
Who had edited it?
His, like, he had him in his office. So this subcontractor who were contracted into us.
So not the person that had hurt themselves, the manager. No, their boss. That person. Right, yeah.
Yeah, their boss edited it.
Jesus Christ. So I'm the injured party. I've sent you my certificate or this guy to my certificate to say, mm-hmm. I don't have the capacity.
Yeah.
And he'd edited it to say he does have the capacity so that it doesn't go into the LTI.
Yeah. Now, the injured party, like, I will say this, that company looked after him. Like, they did look after him. There was nothing on their end with him that was dodged. They let him have his time off, paid, made sure he got all the medical treatment he needed, da da da. So
they were just fudging
that guy was completely unaware that any of this was going on.
Right.
And he got his workers' compensation and all that was sorted. But from our end, it was, that's where the smoke and mirrors kind of started.
So why do you, this is kind of more hypothetical, you're not gonna be able to answer, but like, they've got the same problems that we have, and in some cases, particularly this one, worse. Issues than we have, because I've been in safety, what, 10 years, and I've never come across that. I've seen people try and fudge LTIs, don't get me wrong, but never forging documents or going to someone's doctor's appointment. Jesus Christ. You get a black eye if you try to follow someone to their doctor's appointment in England.
It wouldn't happen here either. There's no way.
No.
There is no way.
So why do you think all this new view comes out of Australia then? Because it is, most of the more innovative work that's in safety is coming out of Australia. We can't deny that.
It is, but is that at an academic level? That's not down on the ground yet. Like, no. Now, again, it wasn't 3 years ago when I was there.
Yeah.
It might be now, but I'd be very surprised if it might be being piloted in a few places, but I don't know. Like, I have friends working over there still that still do all that kind of stuff.
Wow. So when
your volume's gone really low, or else my volume's gone low.
No, I turned it down because it kept going. So I'll turn it up a little bit. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
All right. I turned it down because every time I was going, yeah, it was going.
You can edit that out.
I was trying to make my job easier for me later on when I have to edit it. So why did you come back to Ireland? Was it personal or was it career?
Always personal. Like Australia is a fantastic place. It's just too far away.
Yeah.
Like it's just the distance. Far away. Like it's so fucking far. Yeah, and it was like I had been there 9 years. Like, what am I? What? And like the first five were absolutely mental. Like, they were just the best crack ever. And then everyone just either started to leave. Like people say, oh, the Irish are great at assimilating all over the world. It's like, we kind of stick to our own over there as well. Like, so work with Irish, drink with Irish, live with Irish. And a lot of them started moving home. And then you kind of look around, you're like, oh, it's not as much crack anymore. Or they start settling down, moving out to the suburbs, having kids, da da da. And it wasn't the buzz had gone out of it. So yeah, just kind of got I had been homesick for probably about 3 years. My fellow was working fly in, fly out at the time, so he was loving it. He did not want to come. I was like, come on away home now, it's time. He was like, no, making so much money. I was like, yeah, I know, but fuck it, we're going. So yeah, it was just homesickness.
Okay,
that's all it was.
So when you came home, was that when you were at you said you retrained and ended up going in hospitality? Did you come home with the vision to work in hospitality?
No, I had come home with a vision of, I'm going to go back to college. I was actually going to do social work. Oh, I was going to do that. And that kind of had been in my head for a very long time. So I was going to come home and do that. And but because I'd been away so long, I wasn't eligible for the kind of free fees that normal Irish residents would be eligible for, which I was fucking raging about. But anyway, I have to be back living in the EU for however long. So yeah, I tried to get every other job under the sun that was not safety. Really? And I was home then probably about 3 months, and I was like, okay, I need to get working and I'm not getting anything else. And the first safety job I got, I was like, right, fine. Well,
and you were like, for fuck's sake.
For fuck's sake. Yeah. And I was kind of with a fit out crowd for a while, and then I was with a mechanical crowd and pharma. Oh my God, I hated pharma so much. Like, I will never ever go back. It was so bad.
Really?
Yeah, I hated it. Like, you want to talk about, like, they have a rule for literally everything, which I get for, like, you know, process safety or whatever, and it needs to be when it needs to be, but everything's so, from the outside looking in, everything seems so perfect and clean and just not like construction. I was like, there's literally nothing to, I mean, and I remember I had walked on a sidewalk one day and came back and I had literally nothing written on my inspection. Not one thing. I was like, right, grand. Filed it away. A foreman came in. He goes, geez, the state of the place above there. Would you ever go up and tell them to do a bit of housekeeping? I was like, where? I was like, will you actually walk with me to the exact place and tell me where the housekeeping issues are? And we walked up and there was like a little scrap of plastic, one sideways barrier. Like, that was it. And I was like, is this? Oh, so this is the right. That's the problem. It's like, get me the fuck out of here. Like, I just couldn't cope with it. I was like, this is bananas. So I was like, there was not enough bad shit. And
saying that says, and this is really heartless and really insensitive saying, but like, if shit can't kill you, I don't want to work there.
Like, I totally get it. Yes. Like, actually, in Sydney, when I was working on, like, they were building apartments, and they're like, so we've the carpet layers coming in. I was like, I'm done. I'm out. Like, I do not care. I don't care about laying carpet. I don't care about fitting kitchens. I'm not into it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's
It's kind of like that. Have you watched the film Jarhead?
No.
It's like a really shit version of Jarhead, in that they train to be snipers and to, you know, assassinate people or whatever. And their entire lives, and they never got to take a shot. So it's about like the mental turmoil.
Is Jake Gyllenhaal in that?
Yes.
Is it him?
He's the main character. It's kind of like a firefighter, not, you know, they don't want that big fire to happen, but they also kind of want that big fire to happen. It's kind of like that with safety professionals, I think.
Like, it is, but not with like a hero complex. Not like, I'll come in and save the day when there's loads of shit wrong. It's like, because no, once the shit hits the fan, then you're like, oh my God, I really wish this didn't happen. Everybody panic. But at the same time, you don't want it literally. So I just couldn't.
No.
I just could not. No. Cope with it. Like everybody losing their shit because one person isn't wearing their hard hat. Emails flying, fucking non-conformance, da da da. And they're just not getting the response out of me because I was like, I'm sorry, I don't understand. Also, you want to do a full stand down with everyone about the hard hat. This is my notice. I'm leaving. could not cope with it. I couldn't cope. Oh.
So were you working in safety at that time, fully like in the back of your head, the second I can get out of safety, I'm gone?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And still looking at courses online of, okay, I'm going to go back to college. And even if my boss does listen to this, when I started in the company I'm with now, I was like, fucking safety. Like, oh. And I found it really boring.
Right.
Like, I was just like, this is the dullest thing. And you know when you meet someone and you're like, oh, what do you do? And you're like, oh, God,
yeah.
Safety.
Yeah.
And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah.
Do you think I was talking to my wife about this last night, actually. Like, I think it's a really lonely career.
I think it can be, yeah.
So many people don't get what we actually do. And I understand there's a lot of careers out there that people, you know, you see all the memes, like what my mum thinks I do, what my mates think I do and all that. But like, I think with safety, like, it's like universally misunderstood. And universally not really something that anybody wants. Like, you know, all of my mates are tradies. Like, all of them are builders, plumbers, engineers, whatever. They've all got a skilled trade. And none of them are, maybe you could, like, I think safety is more of a kind of maybe like business strategy, corporate, maybe like academic type of role. Whereas they're all kind of like engineering construction types roles. So I go to the pub and they're all like, well, yeah, like bricks and wood and pipes and shit. And they're like, you know, talking to
each other. You're sounding like you're insecure now about your like masculinity or something, bricks and pipes and shit.
It is kind of like that. It is kind of, especially from a bloke's point of view, it is like that, if I'm honest. It really is like, well, yeah. It doesn't help that I'm not into football and I'm not into cars either. So when they start to, or motorbikes, so when they start talking about that shit as well, it is kind of like that. It is kind of a bit like, but for men, like, we are traditionally seen as having those physical roles. And if you're not an engineer or you're not a builder, like, you genuinely have very little males to sit and talk with. Like, I go to the pub, it's been that long since I've been in a pub. I don't know what to call it anymore. I go to the pub with the lads and I'm just like, and they were like, oh, how's work? And I'd be like, fucking hell, yeah, I went on construction site the other day. And this fucking happened and that fucking, they're all like, yeah, yeah, that happened to me. And I'm just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Nobody, not fucking one of them will go, how's work, James? Because they just do not want to talk about it. Because they don't know what to say. They don't know what I fucking do. And that's why it infuriates me even more, is when I hear stories about how they experience safety and it's just not what I want them to experience. It infuriates me even more.
Yeah.
So I do think it's a really lonely profession. I really do.
I actually remember when, like, the first time I met my fella's parents, and like, his dad owns a construction business, and first when it was like, when I had been working in traffic control, it was like, are you a traffic warden, like a parking parking warden. I was like, no, 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 I'm not that person who gives people tickets for fucking double parking. But then it got worse. There's one thing worse. Your safety advisor. I was like, yeah, like, yay. And it was like, you are literally the bane of our existence. Like, he was, you could tell, it was, he didn't say that, but it was written all over his face. I was like, oh Christ, hey in-laws. Like, not good. And even my dad, because my dad is a tiler, and I'm like, hey, so how's the whole wearing glasses while you're grinding thing? And he's like, don't fucking go there. I'm like, right, I do. Okay, never mind. Yeah.
And do you get the text message of a picture randomly off a friend or family that's like, whoop, look at that, health and safety, send it to James. Do you know what I mean? Like,
not that much, but the odd time, yeah. A lot of times I'll actually get them from, like, I'll get some of them from the lads at work, and I'm like, oh fucking hell, please don't, because if I see this, I can't deny that I've seen it, please don't. But yeah, so there's yeah, look, it can be lonely, but I don't know, it's and definitely, yeah, people outside of work. Yeah, no, actually, now that you mention it, I'm like, I don't ever think I talk to anybody about what I do at work.
Yeah, exactly.
Other than my partner, but that's it. I don't really, people don't ask, because yeah, I, like you say, they probably have a preconceived notion of what it is. But even like, it's like, even the people at work within the company that I currently work with definitely have a preconceived notion of what it is that I do. And like, that's fine. But definitely before, I would have said, oh yeah, work and safety. Whereas now, definitely over the last year that I've kind of, I don't know, found a bit of a grow for it. I'm like a fucking class job. I'm like, I get to like drive around to all these different places all the time, you know, and chat to different people every day and learn about different stuff and help solve problems. Even though half the time I'd say they're like, you're finding fucking problems. I'm like, I am, but hey, there's going to be a solution. Like, woo. Fun. But yeah, it's like, it's pretty, to be fair, it's a pretty cool job when you, if you get a good job with a good, if you get a good company, that's the other thing. Like, you can really get landed in the shit where it's like zero crack, no fun, just where you have to, where they, like, the other thing is, and I think you touched on it, it's like, oh, people don't really know what we do, and even like business leaders often don't know what we do. But they don't want, they know what they don't want. Like, they don't want a complete stick in the mud police officer type. So they know they don't want that. But at the same time, I'm not sure if they could articulate exactly what they do want. But I know they want someone who does get along with people and who can kind of get things done in a certain way, or get around people, or bring people along with them, that kind of thing. I suppose, as we've touched on a lot of them, like the softer skills or whatever it is that you can't really, and it's almost like the X factor of a safety person. How do you hire for that? And you don't know, and I guess they don't know if they've got it until the person in the role. What I'm saying is, it's me. Edit that out.
I'm here. I'm Alicia. Yeah.
But I'm actually not open to work. I'm very happy where I work.
Do you want me to just delay the publish of this podcast for whenever you're ready to look for a new job?
Yeah.
And then we'll put this out.
Then we'll put it out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
My boss will be like, did you say something about a podcast? I'm like, nope, it's
not.
We didn't do it in the end.
But in like 3 years' time. P45, and if you want to pass this podcast on to anybody that's potentially hiring, please do.
Actually, one time that I'm able to, there's two times that I'm able to genuinely not swear, and that is funerals and job interviews. So it's like, job interviews, I can manage to not swear, and it's like day one, I'm like, fucking thanks for hiring me, yay.
Well, let's talk about the swearing. Let's talk about this. Alicia, let's talk about your swearing.
Oh, I sounded like you're swearing.
I sounded about you, like your mum or something when I said that, didn't I? Alicia, can we talk about your swearing, please? That's like, not how I meant to
fuck sound. Fuck off, mum. No, we can't.
Yeah, we fucking can. Yeah. I'd rather swear more. Like, let's talk about the swearing, because it is something that you, as you know, Elisa, it gets my back up a little bit about the swearing thing, right? I can tend to lose my shit at people that get a bit uppity about swearing. And how do I say this? Does it have any reflection on you? Like, why do you not swear in an interview? There you go. Let's start there. Why do you not swear in an interview?
Why do I not swear in an interview? Actually, it is a good question. And I am trying to think back. I'm like, has there ever been an interview I did swear in? And I think there was one. And I did get the job with that because he swore first. So I was like, fucking yes. you know, he was dropping F-bombs all over the place. I was like, oh,
that's
well.
It. Buffet's open.
Well, like, you know, again, that's part of what got me the job, because we got on. Look, it is that outdated view of professionalism or whatever.
Because you swear. That is your personality, right? I swear. I was born and raised around swearing. Ironically, my mum fucking hates it, but I've just worn her down over the years now that she's just given up. And my mother-in-law also was never a massive fan of swearing, but now she swears more than me. So I've kind of just made her one of us, which I'm starting to
find
a much better way to go.
The first time I was going meeting John's parents, right? Like, just about to go in the door, and he turns to me and he was like, so by the way, we just kind of don't really swear around my parents. And I was like, who doesn't? And he was like, any of us. And I was like, what the fuck do you mean? You don't, like, what? I was having a conniption about to go into this, like, and I was like, how does that work? And he goes, it just kind of switches off. I was like, it fucking doesn't switch off. It gets worse in these scenarios. Panic, patients. Panic. So.
Mine is swearing and joking. I will make terrible jokes. I will say a joke and be like, in my head, I'm like, why the fuck did you just say that, James? But that's that's my comfort blanket. That's
same. How me, and also saying awkward. I love to just call out when it's awkward. I'm like, well, this is terribly awkward, isn't it?
I always go, weather's nice.
The face.
To bring it back to the point, like, for and this is difficult, because I get why people don't like, but I genuinely do think it's outdated. If I swear in an interview, so for example, I swear on the podcast, less so now, I'm a little bit less angry, but especially back in the day, like, I was an angry young man when I started my podcast, and this was therapy for me, and I used to swear like the fucking clappers, like, all the time. Every other word was an F word. I think the C word is the only word I haven't said on this podcast, because I understand that.
Well, like, you do use it though, like, outside of the podcast.
Even though it's my favorite word.
Favorite word. Yeah.
Like, I'm like, why would you park like a, why are you driving like a, why
or
is that safety
better,
professional?
Instead of saying effing, say like,
yes. Yeah, that's even better. That's even better.
What the best? The first time I said it in a side office, and it was in Sydney, I was like, "This fucking," and like, the site manager stopped me. He was like, "You can't say that." And amazingly, like, the Aussies, they drop that word constant. Like, they really
they swear worse than us, I think.
They swear a lot, and one of them had said the C word, and then. So I was like, you can't say that in front of Elisa. Like, oh my God, because I was the only woman inside office. You can't say it. And I was like, it's all right, I have one. Like, it's grand. And they all nearly fucking died. They were like, what did you just say? I was like, I mean, I can say it more than anyone. And just after that, it was a fucking free-for-all. Like, I don't know if you should actually edit that out. Maybe, I don't know.
No, that was great. That was great. Because do you know what I think about it, Elisa? I'm like, if you don't like it, it's not for you. Like, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, and that's what I think. So we feel like, it kind of reminds me of that Ricky Gervais thing. Like, if you've gone your whole life without being upset by somebody or something like that, it's like you're doing it fucking wrong. Like, do you know, I can't remember what the quote is, and I've just fucking butchered that. But my point is like, look, I swear, and I'm gonna swear, so I might as well just fucking swear in the interview, because if you don't like it, then at least then we know at that point, and you don't employ me, and they go, we're not employing you, James, because you said the C word in an interview. And I'll be
like, okay, to be fair, there are definitely degrees to it, and I won't be dropping C-bombs in any interviews. Like, it's not...
And neither would I. And I actually...
talking interview, you definitely can't say it.
And I don't think I'm struggling to think of a time when I've swore in an interview, and I can't. But my point is, it's just like, it doesn't have any reflection on you or me as more or less of a professional. The same as we don't judge someone that doesn't swear for being, say, well, the common thing is if you swear, you don't have the vocabulary. Ironic that I struggled to say that, right? But, you know, that's what they say. Or if you don't swear, then you don't understand the English language well enough to articulate yourself well enough. As far as I'm concerned, I understand the English language very well. And if one chooses to fucking swear, then one will swear. Do you know what I mean?
It sounds like, so fancy because you've an English language. If one fucking chooses to swear.
Yeah, exactly. But my point around it is just like, it doesn't have any reflection on me as doing my job. But my issue is the fact that we judge people with it. Like, and I think the safety professional, in my opinion, has a very skewed vision of professionalism. Now, maybe it's not just the safety profession, but I think we are up the wazoo with it. Like, if you swear and don't wear a shirt and tie, you cannot be a chartered fellow. Like, that's what it feels like. It might not be like that. It's definitely not like that, but it feels like that.
Well, yeah, but like, that's good. They're all like, they, IOSH type people, that whole organization puts across the whole, this is what professional is and da da da, whatever. I mean, and it's bizarre because, like you say, it's 2021, language has evolved, it will keep evolving. And yeah, I use swearing to punctuate, I use it to express myself, I use it to show that I'm fucking passionate about something. Like, how I literally don't know how else to come across genuine. And I'm not saying people who don't swear aren't genuine, but there definitely are some studies that say something similar to that. But I just feel more myself when I do swear. Yeah. And I do feel that, like, for a lot of people, it kind of disarms them, especially if you're out, like, on site or shop floor or whatever. If they see you swearing, it's definitely like, oh, she's not as fucking uptight, or she's not that kind of wound up about things.
Yeah.
It brings things just down to a bit of a more amicable level.
It's a tool. And
there's fucking, yeah. And there's context. There's context of and how you use it. Swearing in general language versus swearing at someone is very different.
Yeah.
Like, so to say, I find your swearing offensive, and it's like, well, if I call you a fucking dickhead, then yeah, you should find it offensive.
Yeah, because it's intended to be that way.
It's fucking chair that I'm sitting on, then no, it's not offensive. You're a twat, which then is also offensive.
And we're getting onto a much bigger conversation here about what's offensive and what's not, isn't it? But like, two little stories. One story, but actually, firstly, to your point, it's a tool, and I think it does relax the room a lot. Like, if you're on a tour, what's taught you in, you know, I've been in training sessions with a load of lads that are like engineers, and you listen to them in the workshop, they're like, fucking this, fucking that, fucking this. And they come in the training room and you just see them all, and they come in and they're so like awkward.
it's shocking.
And they're all like, hello, James, how are you? You okay? Yeah. And you could just see them all. And I'm just like, how can I get these lot to relax? And I'm just like, it is fucking pissing it down out there, lads, isn't it? What a fucking day that is. And just really show them right up front, lads, we're just going to have a training session today, right? But it's no different from me and you chit-chatting, right? You want to swear, swear. If you don't want to swear, don't swear. But where's the line when you get someone that goes, I find that really offensive? So the fact that I don't find it offensive, and I'm saying to you, if you don't find it offensive, you shouldn't impose on me. What if what I'm doing, somebody else finds offensive? This is where it gets a bit gray for me. Like, so I've delivered a training session before, right? And used the phrase, my missus, which is a very local term for me. I was born and raised with my missus. That's how I refer to my wife, even now. And Now, there's some context to this as well, but I basically got a phone call afterwards where they're saying, James, you're being accused of being a chauvinistic arsehole, basically. And I was like, excuse me? Like, I am. I am many things, but I do not think I'm chauvinistic. Arsehole? Yes. Chauvinistic? not quite sure. Based on what? Oh, because you were using chauvinistic terms like my missus. And then that was it. I got my fucking back up then. And I was just like, how fucking dare you assume what my relationship is like and how I treat my wife based on two fucking words. I'm more offended by the fact that you think that I'm
assuming. I'm offended that you're offended.
Yeah, and that's where we got to. Like, I'm offended that you're offended by my word. Now, there's context to it. The example, the kind of case study we used in the training session was the building that the guy that coincidentally complained about me using this term. It was his building. So it was his kind of responsibility to manage that building. And we were like, this is wrong. This is wrong. That's wrong. This is wrong. So he was probably just trying to get his own back. But the point is that language is just so complex, isn't it? And I don't know. I go back and forth on this swearing thing all the time. And I'm like, you know, what if I was in a meeting and someone said, I genuinely find that really offensive, can you stop swearing? I would probably cut my swearing down.
Look, yeah, I mean, I probably would as well. It's not a hill I want to die on. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, and if somebody was really offended by it, I'd be like, right, grand, no bother. I'll try. I can't promise anything, but I'll try. So yeah, but to your point, actually, about like going into a training room full of lads and you're just like, you're trying to fucking smooth it out or whatever, bring the tension down, and using it as a tool. And I'm actually just trying to picture, have I ever been in a work scenario that hasn't been completely male dominated? And I don't think I have. So like, if I walked into a room full of women, would I be fucking and blinding?
Would you do the same?
Probably wouldn't.
It's interesting.
I haven't. There's not enough women in the industry. That's why it hasn't happened for me. But anyway.
And cultures as well, like different cultures around the world. I've had a gentleman message me from a different culture that said, I really love your content, but I wish you'd stop swearing because in my religion and my culture, that's really offensive. And I was like, in my culture, it's not offensive. I'm really sorry, but that's just kind of how I roll.
Yeah, like, and I think I don't know, I think that I have a fairly good compass on kind of where wrong and right is and what's actually wrong, like what I shouldn't be doing versus what might be offensive to someone. Like, you know, swearing, offensive. But like, if you're being chauvinistic, sexist, racist, like that's a problem. And that's one that, you know, should get called out 100%. And you kind of go, that's fucking wrong. Done. That's not the kind of thing that needs a devil's advocate. That's not the kind of thing that you go back and forth on. And I feel like I know where the line is on that kind of thing. Swearing to me isn't, I'm like, you're offended by it, but how much does it impact you? It doesn't, I don't think. Maybe different for the guy who it's religion, but if he was in the room with you, it might be a different thing. But no, he's just fucking choosing to listen to your podcast. So, and hello to you. If you are listening to this, welcome.
I sincerely advise you to listen to another podcast.
No, God, don't listen to this episode. It's too late. We should have said that at the top of the episode. Clip this out and put it at the start.
We should have just had a little swear jar, shouldn't we? Like, and see how much money we
can. You know, earn. I must be told definitely once a month, you know, when you get swear jar, would you fuck off? It's not funny anymore. It's like, it really annoys me, the swear jar thing. Like, go away. You'll have loads of money. I'm like, oh, will I? It's my own money. So I already have it. Go away.
I need to save it. Thank you. Yeah. I'm already saving it. Fuck off.
Amen.
I do find the swearing thing is a really difficult battle. Like, I struggle with it nearly every day. And
do you?
Yeah, nearly every day. Whether it's friends, family, not friends because they're just as bad as me, but whether it's family or a career or, you know, if I could count on, I could count on about two hands how many times I've been called unprofessional, and most of it is based around wow. swearing.
That's never happened. Like, that's actually never happened to me.
Think of the different industries, though, to your point. You've worked in yeah. construction. I've worked in manufacturing, and then the NHS, housing, and, yeah. and now I'm back.
Like, I've definitely been called out in it, but it's more been commented on than nobody's ever said that's really unprofessional, because I would absolutely fucking lose my shit if somebody said that to me. I'd be like, I'll fucking show you unprofessional. Call the guards.
That is kind of what happened. all seven times, but you know, it is something I've struggled with my entire career, because yeah. it just comes out. I'm like, and it comes out more with passion, to your earlier point. Like, if I'm in there and someone's like, right, we've got this problem, and I'm like, what the fuck, who the fuck has been doing this? Do you know what how have you not fucking dealt this? Why the fuck has no one spotted it? Like, that will
literally
doesn't
sound come very
out.
Empathetic, James.
No.
What's the context?
All right, fuck off. But you know what I mean? That's when it will come out. That, like, yeah. if I'm in a meeting where someone's like, oh yeah, I know they passed away, but we're compliant, and when, like, I'm gonna fucking swear in that conversation.
Then you go, yeah.
You know what I mean? And that, if the second that passion comes in, I'm off. And and it's not like losing control is not the right way to describe it, because that's not what it's like. It's not like a rabid animal and I have to keep it on a leash. It's just like, that's just what you do. Now, sometimes I'm in an environment and I think, do you know what? I'm going to get my message across better here if I don't swear.
Yeah.
And then yeah. I can rein it in. But it is something I've struggled with my entire career.
Not going to stop doing it though.
But then you've worked in construction your entire career, so you know, which is a much more sweary environment.
Yeah, it is. And even more, like, the Irish swear a lot, but the Australians, like, fuck, they, like, literally, like, even meetings with senior execs, like, they're dropping F-bombs, like, it's, you know, they say shit on the radio because shit isn't a swear word over there.
Oh, I need to move to us.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of environment. And then you come back here and it's, look, we swear a lot in Ireland as well. But again, industry kind of, I can't speak to any other industry because I don't really know. Yeah, that time I was dabbling around in pharma for about 6 months, I was kind of like, you're not really swearing that much.
You were like, you were walking around, oh, bloody hell, are these rapscallions? Christ.
Yeah, like, oh. But anyway,
helpful for me to have that conversation around swearing.
Good.
But granted, that wasn't planned, but thank you for that. I did want to touch on one last question, which I was going to ask you, and then we're going to run into a long conversation, but we won't run into a long conversation now about it, because I'm starving, haven't had my dinner.
I'm so hungry.
And you, yeah, if you've not had your dinner, you're hungry as well.
I had a cup of tea beforehand because I knew this was going to happen, but go on.
So you wanted to work in care, you trained to work in hospitality, you had worked your fucking ass off to not work in safety. The first time you messaged me on LinkedIn, you were like, I fucking had enough of this shitty career. Like, really considering.
Well, I didn't see it even as a career. I never saw it as a career.
Well,
either.
Yeah. So why do you stay now? What changed?
Like, honestly, it's like, ever since the start of, was it even the start of COVID? It was probably just before COVID that I had started like that, listening to podcasts and kind of just, I can't remember what it was. I was on LinkedIn and I was kind of saying, and I was definitely one of the ones, LinkedIn shit, hate LinkedIn, worst piece of social media ever. Why do people use this platform? And now I'm like addicted to the fucking thing. But and then I had been listening to your podcast, and then I had been kind of linking into like other people from that, and then I was like, oh, there's actually some like kind of non-asshole safety people on here. And then just started following that kind of content. And then when COVID happened, and all these webinars started up, and you just kind of, it was like fucking mind blown as to all the ways that this job can actually be interesting, that can be really engaging, the amount of learning, like, you know, all the buzzwords, curiosity. But it, like, it is, it's actually, and when you view it,
empathetic,
authentic. But like when you start viewing it through that lens, it, like, and I used to say it myself, like, oh no, 2 days are the same. Yeah, but they're both usually shit. whereas now I'm like, no, 2 days are the same, because I genuinely learn something new every day. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. So now I view it as an actual a career where I'm like, oh, I can progress and I can learn more and I can get better at this. And just to give Peter Jenkins and all name drop, someday I can talk about this stuff like Peter talks about it. But it's, yeah, before I never viewed it as a career. It was always just job after job after job. Whereas now I'm like, oh, I could actually learn some stuff and like be an asset to a company and pop the shit out of it someday. I don't know. So yeah, that's kind of,
so does that like answer your question? It was a slow burn in a way.
It was a very slow burn. It was almost fucking extinguished. It was like, I'm gone.
Well, COVID wasn't that long ago, so I'm surprised.
No, it's like literally a year turnaround.
So this is close to you. It's only really been recently that you've gone, oh yeah, fuck it, I'll stick with this now.
Yeah, like I literally went from, when did I message you? In May.
We worked out the other day, didn't we, on a million call?
I had messaged you in May, but it was actually in February, my boss at the time was like, and he's still my boss now, but he was like, you know, would you do a bit of like networking and using LinkedIn? And I was like, fuck. So I'm like, yeah, grand, no bother. And then there was this IOSH conference on in Cork for the South of Ireland branch. And
it was like, yeah, I've got it here. May 2020, yeah.
Yeah. So in February, I went to the IOSH conference, right? And it was in person because it was before lockdown. And like, what a fucking conference, right? For IOSH, it's pretty good. You had Kevin from Maersk, right? Kevin Furness, in person, doing his thing.
Yeah.
Nippin, in person, doing his thing. Like, it was, Mabel Ockland was there from Maersk as well. Like, it was, I kind of went into the room and I had never heard of these people. And I was sitting next to a guy and they started on about safety differently. He was like, oh, for fuck's sake. And I was like, okay, all right, we'll see what's going on. And next, by the end of the day, I just could not believe the stuff I was hearing inside there. I was like, from considering 3 years beforehand, I had been at this art of work thing in Sydney and been like, this is never going to take off, to being in a conference in Ireland. And they were talking about it. Now, there was a lot of pushback in the room and I was looking around going, this is fucking hilarious. This is unreal. Because there was so much discomfort, but I was like, oh, I'm into this.
And, you in the back going, awkward.
Yeah. And I was actually sitting next to Marion, who ended up being my lecturer in college now.
Cool.
But and I had kind of got chatting to her and I was like, I don't know, I'm thinking about maybe going back to college, and like I was going to do social work. And there was actually a woman there who had just graduated from the higher diploma in safety. And she was like, I've actually just moved from social work over to safety.
Oh.
She was like, I've just done this diploma, you should do it. And I was like, right. And I was flitting back and forth, would I, wouldn't I, for all of last summer. All the while having, you know, watching all the webinars and all the stuff that was going on, and just the access that we got in the last year. Mm. To people Crazy. That we would never get access to. Because even a couple of weeks after that, IOSH, the same branch, put on this webinar with Sydney Decker and Michael Tuma. Like,
what the fuck? Fucking mental.
Now, I had been, yeah, it was class. Like, I was on the chat like, hey, fucking Sydney. Mad. And when I had signed up to do the higher diploma, I had put it on LinkedIn. And there was a lot of people traditional safety, all that kind of thing. But considering I had done what I would consider a fucking Mickey Mouse diploma over in Australia, I didn't feel qualified. So I was like, I need to do something because I'm technically not qualified here. I have the experience, but there is that bit of having the piece of paper, I suppose, just to confirm that you're doing the right thing. So yeah, and I started and I wasn't mad about it now for the first couple of months. The human factors was more about mice and fucking boxes and Skinner's theory shit. I was like, what is this about? And then enter Marion and her risk assessment module, which everyone's going, risk assessment would be very boring. And next thing she comes in with like Kinevan framework, safety differently, organizational drift, and blew my fucking mind completely. So, and now I'm here.
Nice.
And now I am wrecking everybody's head at work. Constantly like, let's do shit, like, let's micro experiment. And they're like, how? I'm like, I don't know. I read a blog.
I don't know, I read a blog. I might just call that the title of this podcast. I don't know. I read
that
a blog.
Should, but yeah, I don't know. I read a blog.
Yeah, Elisa Lynch, I don't know. I read a blog. That's happening. That's what we're going to call it.
That's it. Yeah. Look, it was good. It was good crack.
Good.
Good crack.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast, Elisa.
And we don't, like, you're not, like, this, you're done now, are you?
Well, at this point, if I just said thank you very much, you go thank you, and then I press stop recording. But I'm just going to press stop now.
Edit this out.
No, this is staying in. Okay, peeps, hope you enjoyed that conversation with Elisa. If you did, please, please, please give it a share, give it a like, give it a review, whatever, give it a rating, whatever platform you're on, please do spread the word about rebranding safety. Don't forget to check out Paradigm Human Performance Learning Organization webinar. And if you're an SME, don't forget to check out the HSC subscription service. You can contact them using the details in the description, or you can go to the website in the description as well. But otherwise, I'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.